Welcome to another episode of What Matters in North Carolina. As always, I'm your host, Matt Calder, and we are glad you're with us today on What Matters in North Carolina. On today's show, we'll be talking with Brooke Medina of the Civitas Institute about the State of the Union address that happened, President Donald Trump's first State of the Union address, and sort of our reaction to that. And then also, we'll be talking about the news with CLC that just happened. That's the Conservative Leadership Conference that Civitas Institute puts on. Of course, the Civitas Institute being a sponsor for this show. And they have now announced their headliner for the show, and I will wait and let Brooke fill you in on that. But you definitely want to hear who it is, because it's going to be a good event. At least it looks like it's shaping up to be another good conference from the Civitas Institute. Again, those dates will be April 13th and 14th in Raleigh at the Crabtree Marriott. And you can get those tickets online at civitasclc.org. Again, that's civitasclc.org. So now we will move right into our segment with Brooke Medina. All right, Brooke, thanks for coming back on the show.
I'm glad to be back, Matt.
So this time, though, you're coming on to at least to start to talk about CLC. And, of course, you're, you know, with the Civitas Institute, and the people who've heard the show before know that. But if you're new to the show, this is Brooke Medina with the Civitas Institute, and she is going to talk to us a little bit about the Conservative Leadership Conference coming up in mid-April, April 13th and 14th.
Is that correct? So it's going to start on Friday afternoon, which is April 13th, Friday the 13th, but we will not be showing any Freddy Krueger films or anything of the like. We will begin and kick off CLC with something exciting, although that is yet to be revealed. But when you get your early bird tickets, which are still on sale, you will maybe get exclusive insight into that via email once we begin sending out that information. But yes, so CLC, April 13th and 14th of this year. It does not coincide with Easter, so it will not affect those plans for you, so you can make it out. And we're going to have a great time. It's always a good time. Some amazing food and definitely wonderful conversation and insight from those in the conservative movement that are leading the way for the rest of us.
All right. And so, but this past week there was an announcement a big announcement, and that was the keynote speaker for the Conservative Leadership Conference. And do you want to kind of let the listeners in on who that is?
Absolutely. So we have a Friday evening headliner, and we are so excited about this individual because they epitomize where the conservative movement is going and how we can grow our base. And that is crucial, I believe, for conservatives to stay not only relevant to their current base, but also to expand and win the college age generation and those coming up, maybe even Generation Zers. So that individual is none other than Dennis Prager, who is the founder of Prager University, which is the YouTube channel, and they have their own website as well, that just creates these incredibly concise but just straight to the point, punchy 5-minute videos that explain really complex issues in a way that is just a manageable bite size that, basically decimates the lies and the propaganda that are pushed on especially younger generations by the left.
Right, and that is, again, you know, Dennis Prager is a radio host, does his Prager U, columnist, author,
he lectures. I mean, he's incredible. He is a man that wears many hats. I think I think there was something about him musically. He directs some films, or he has produced a documentary about Israel. He's also helping. He's part of No Safe Spaces, which is with Adam Carolla, and it's another video that's going to be released soon regarding safe spaces on the college campuses, and he's pushing back against that. He also periodically conducts orchestras and has introduced hundreds of thousands of people to classical music. I mean, the man is amazing. He is a Renaissance man
for
our time.
But so that's going to be the Friday night headliner.
Yes, so that's Dennis Prager. There will be a VIP reception, and so those tickets are in addition to the conference tickets themselves, but that's where you would actually have the opportunity to meet Dennis Prager one-on-one and speak with him, take a photo with him, have some pre-dinner drinks and hors d'oeuvres. And then we also have the actual conference ticket, which would cover your Friday evening dinner, which is always amazing. I mean, the Crabtree Marriott, they do an excellent job with food. The hotel is beautiful. It's been renovated, I think, last year, and it's just gorgeous. So he will be speaking during that as well. You definitely do not want to miss it. Dennis Prager, like I said, if you're concerned about the conservative movement reaching younger generations, you will find a lot to be just set your mind at ease when you hear Dennis Prager talk, and just the way that he's inspiring so many young people with regard to just cogent arguments that are, you know, foundationally sound philosophically, ethically, morally, and civically. And that is, he is exactly the sort of person that is there to equip the younger generation to push back against the lies of the left.
Right. And where can they get those tickets?
Go to civitasclc.org. And like I said, early bird pricing is going on right now. I don't know exactly how long it will last, so you will not want to miss that opportunity to save some money on your tickets. If you are a student at a college or a high school student, there is a special discount for you. So you can call us at Civitas to inquire about that, or go to our website, shoot us an email. Also, once again, that's civitasclc.org.
All right, and that's just a couple months away now. I mean, we're coming up, record by the time the show comes out, it'll be into the beginning of February, and this will be the middle of April. So it's kind of the short time to get
Yeah, we're in the home stretch right now, and we've been doing a lot to prepare for the CLC, and it's going to be better than even any of the other ones in the past, and that's a pretty high bar to meet, but I have no doubt it's going to be incredible. We're going to have some great vendors there as well, just representing different conservative movements within the state and outside of the state. And also, you're going to get a chance to meet our brand new president, Donald Bryson, and he is a great person to get to interact with one-on-one. He's been having a lot of speaking engagements lately, so you may have caught him on the news, either Spectrum News or some of the other radio stations around. So we are just all around excited about what the future holds, not only for Civitas in particular, but conservatives all across our state. North Carolina is a great place to live, and the people that are involved in making it even better, just hats off to you, and we're excited to help equip you to take conservatism into the 2018 and 2019, and show up.
All right, so that's that, and that's not the only reason I've got you on the show today. This is being recorded, Wednesday, so January 31st. So this is the day after the State of the Union, after President Donald Trump's first State of the Union. I know you watched it. I watched it, and just kind of what's your first takeaway from this? I mean, so he addressed a joint session of Congress in February of last year, shortly after taking office. But this is his first State of the Union address. How did it hit you?
Out the gate, I think he did excellent. To be honest with you, I was not sure what to expect. You really don't know what to expect. Sometimes you get a little bit bombastic Trump, or sometimes, as it was the case yesterday, you got a very unity-oriented President Trump and very presidential. I was thoroughly impressed. I mean, I asked some friends on Facebook. We did a Facebook live feed throughout the whole State of the Union, just discussing what we were hearing, our thoughts on different things that he was saying. And, I mean, 1 out of 10, most everybody rated his State of the Union as a 10. I gave him a 9.5, but we can get into why I took that half a point off later. But I just thought it was great. What did you think of it?
I mean, a lot of the things you said, like the extending language, the inclusive language, extending language to the opposite side of the aisle, that was in there. Some people call it an olive branch. Some people said it was just an opportunity to cooperate, and a lot of people on the other side of the aisle have said that it's not anything at all. That they're just there going, oh, that's nothing. There's nothing there. But it's looking at what he said. He was very composed. He was very, very presidential. He didn't come off as selfish or conceited as a lot of people would think it. Or say about him. He didn't say, I'm so great, I'm the best president in the world, I'm amazing. And he wouldn't say those words. But the way he talked, didn't convey that that's what he was thinking or saying.
Right. He shifted the focus onto the American people numerous times and kept, even at the end, you probably remember this, where he was saying the monuments that we have throughout Washington, D.C., are to remind us of the sacrifices made and that freedom isn't free. But this monument, referring to the Capitol building, this is a living monument to the American people, because this is where our elected officials go to make these decisions on behalf of us, we the people. And he really hit that home and did excellent conveying that.
Right. And I thought that he did good on that. And I'm not sure what the account is, but some people were talking about the how many times he used the word I versus past presidents in their State of the Union addresses. And for someone who you would think is this huge egomaniac, judging by a lot of the rhetoric from the media, you didn't get that. You got someone who was constantly pushing focus off onto other parties, whether they were the people he brought to the parents of the student who went to North Korea, or the soldier or the officer who and his wife who adopted the baby from the heroin addict. He was constantly doing that, pushing things away from himself in a way that I thought was really good. He was focusing on the American people, and his places he focuses attention, the economy, tax reform, the immigration policy, these are all things that are his policy points that he wants to hit, and that's what the State of the Union is. But he did it in a way that I thought was presidential. Yeah. I don't watch every word the president says. I don't watch everything he says. But I read, what he's doing. So this was a time when one of the times when I am watching him say it, and I was impressed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, there were a couple of great quotes, and just one that really stood out to me though, which got him a lot of applause, at least on one side of that chamber, was faith and family, not bureaucracy, are the center of American life. The motto is, in God we trust. And I thought that was powerful, because he has been, championing deregulation throughout his presidency this past year and even on the campaign trail. But to not just attack bureaucracy, but also simultaneously say what is at the center of American life, which is faith and family. That to me was just incredibly impressive that he would note that, especially given his history. He's not necessarily known as especially with what's been coming out lately with regard to him paying off supposedly that porn star. You don't look at Donald Trump and say, family man. Now, he has been known to be a great father on that, on the parenting front. But as far as the other faith and family, I was glad that he said that. And I think that goes to show that you can have some, skeletons in your closet, which you undoubtedly need to address and deal with. That's a moral issue. And we shouldn't sweep it under the rug like some Republicans are. But also, we can say, regardless of my moral failings, this is at the center of American life, and it should remain that way. And that's crucial to us as American people to acknowledge that it's in God we trust, and that faith and family are a key component of civil society.
Right. And another thing I thought was interesting, though, is how he took a hard stance on terrorism and support for the military. He took a, hard plain language about, these are terrorists, they're not criminals,
mm-hmm.
They don't get treated like criminals get treated in America, they are terrorists, and he drew that difference, and he talked about the advances made in the against ISIS over the last year in Iraq and Syria, and there's so much of a focus there for him. And he talked about ending the sequestering, rebuilding the military up to this, the premier fighting force that it was and can be as a deterrent effect, rebuilding our nuclear arsenal as a deterrent effect. Mm-hmm. And he said something to the point of he would love a day when we can decommission all of our nuclear weapons, but that day's not here. And I like that too. I mean, so there was over the Obama years, all this breaking down, deconstructing of our nuclear arsenal. But the fact is that we're not there yet. And I agree. I would love for us to be able to do that and not have a single nuclear weapon, because no one in the world would have them, because using them would be awful mm-hmm. for so many people. But if we're not there yet, we're not. It's like owning a gun for self-protection. In a world where we don't need guns, it would be great, but we don't live in that world. A world where no one crashed their cars, we wouldn't need seatbelts and airbags. We don't live in that world.
It's a great point, Matt. And, you know, that's to believe otherwise, such as the Obama administration's policies with regard to denuclearization, it's utopian thinking that is, you know, pragmatic, non-pragmatic to a fault, and that harms us. So, yes, we should be leading by example. And I think Trump did that last night, where he opened the door to dialogue about, you know, reducing the nuclear arsenals without, you know, across the world. But until that end is actually achieved, or until other nations are willing to work toward that end, we cannot just, you know, begin to step back with regard to our nuclear development. You know, and that I wouldn't want to be in that position that I had to make those calls. That's difficult, and there's a lot of nuance in regard to escalating things and you know, just foreign policy in general. It's not an easy thing, but I think that he struck the right tone with that. Also, something amazing, I think this is the most American thing that he said last night: the individual mandate is now gone. That was something, that was an election issue, and it speaks to so many people that are, you know, paying these high, outrageous premiums or are forced to buy something that they do not want nor do they need at the moment. And so that was something that I thought really spoke to who we are as Americans. The government is in no place and has no authority to mandate that we purchase health insurance. So I thought that was great.
Oh, definitely. I mean, and that's one of the things, if you looked at the program, as bad as it seemed as an idea, and I thought the Affordable Care Act was not a good idea, and I still think that, if it's not a requirement, then you can opt out of it. And it increased healthcare costs. You know, there are people who, you look over all the coverages that you have. We had my wife on it for a time, and we were not receiving any subsidies. We were paying full price for this, and we had my wife and my daughter on it for a time. Full price, very expensive. But my wife did not need smoking cessation coverage. She did not need coverage for quitting smoking. She's never smoked a cigarette in her life.
And you probably don't need maternity coverage. Is that right, Matt?
Probably not. I don't think I need maternity coverage. But, and even, you know, we laugh about that, but you think about a woman who is in her 50s
yeah.
or 60s having maternity coverage. And that's, I mean, it's just.
Or post-hysterectomy women. Absolutely. Exactly. I mean, it was.
And cost goes up and up and up for all these unnecessary things that you don't need. And it just, but you're forced to buy it. You're forced to buy this, and it. Getting rid of the individual mandate will sink Obamacare. It will sink it when people who are young people don't need it, they're going to pull out. Then that makes the cost go up even more, and it will eventually need to be taken away, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a matter of time. But that's a good thing, and I honestly think that's a good thing.
Yeah, it is. And so no one is denying that there were problems within our healthcare system and the insurance aspect of it before Obamacare, but we do deny that Obamacare was the solution to that. And I think that this is where Republicans and conservatives are going to have to shine and provide some good free market solutions to this. I mean, they've been railing against it for a long, long time, so I will be interested to see what solutions actually come up once Obamacare is, you know, in its final gasping breaths. Another thing with regard to healthcare, but that's with respect to veterans. And as the daughter and granddaughter and wife of veterans, this was something that really struck a chord with me, and that's that giving vets the choice in their healthcare decisions rather than forcing them to go to the VA that might or might not give them the help they need. And I think that's crucial, knowing, having family members and friends that have gotten just poor service from some VAs. That doesn't mean all VAs are that way. I think there are some great ones, but because their hands have been tied with regard to all these other bureaucratic, you know, pieces of red tape, swaths of red tape, actually, it's become just such an issue, and our veterans are not getting the care that they need, and we need to fix it. And I like that. Who's the guy who's in charge of the VA now? Scott Price, I think is his name. I can't remember for sure, but I remember him talking about taking a free market approach to the VA and giving our veterans more choices. And that is crucial, and our veterans deserve no less than that.
Yeah, that's Shulkin is the VA secretary right now.
Shulkin? Okay, there must have been someone before that.
It was Price.
It was Price, okay. But I'm excited about that as well, and African American and Hispanic unemployment being the lowest ever recorded. That's amazing, and you wouldn't even see any Democrats clapping for it.
Well, they took it was taken as an insult. You could see on the faces that it was taken as an insult when President Trump said it, because President Trump said it. If President Obama had stood up there and said African American employment is at an all-time record low, there would have been cheers. But because it was Trump saying it, and that was the other thing I want to talk about, why I love watching the State of the Union. Listening to the State of the Union, fine. Reading, fine. Watching it is important, because you'll see these gems, like Nancy Pelosi's face.
Nancy, yes.
From the beginning. This was like two lines into his speech. They look at her. He hasn't even said anything of consequence yet. And she's got this angry, clenched jaw.
It's like she was sucking on a Tide Pod half the time.
Tongue around in her mouth, just pissed off, just angry about everything.
And even Chuck Schumer clapped for something.
Oh, yeah. Some of their clapping, though, this looking at the way, like the heel of the hand clap, like I'm clapping, but I'm making zero noise. Or the Chuck Schumer, the slow, out of tune, out of time, just kind of, I'm clapping. I promise I'm clapping. You can't.
Yeah.
But Nancy Pelosi, just daggers from the beginning.
Oh,
or
totally.
Elizabeth Warren. Did you see what she put on Twitter?
Oh, she goes, what'd she do?
I went to the State of the Union address so that when I get tired and weary in this fight, I can think back on that burned into my brain, and I will be back in the fight. Something to that effect.
Oh, she's such a hero.
She's such a Native American hero.
Let's talk about cultural misappropriation.
Oh, it's awful.
Another segment. So she abuses the affirmative action, you know, policies set in place by the great society to her own gain. And if I were Native American, I would be completely and utterly offended by her, and definitely not plan on voting her into office anytime in the next election.
Yeah, I don't understand how she's still getting into office off of this. I mean,
I don't know.
So did she say 132nd or 164th? Like, what does she say?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't even thought about that for quite some time. I just remember. Didn't she cited her Native Americanness because of her grandfather having high cheekbones? I think that was one way she was able to attribute her, you know, Native American and to her ancestry. And she made an entry into a cookbook somewhere where it was, what did she call the recipe?
I don't remember what she called it, but it was like her grandmother's Native American recipe.
Yeah, powwow chow or something like that.
Powwow. Powwow is right. It was in there.
I mean, that's insulting, I would imagine. I'm not Native American. I am Hawaiian. And honestly, I probably wouldn't be angry if somebody did something like that, like pineapple pudding or something. I would just think it was funny and ridiculous. And I certainly wouldn't give them a platform, though, to say that they identify with, you know, Hawaiian issues. Whatever those are, I mean, they're Americans. That's the way I feel about it.
Right, and I'm trying to remember what percentage she claims, because So there is Native American in my family. And it's funny because my dad could have gotten a scholarship for it. And at 1/16th, you can get a scholarship. So that would make me 1/32nd. And I think she says she's 1/32nd. And no one's looking at me going, that guy is Native American. That guy right there is
PD. You're not talking to the right people, Matt.
I need to just check the box. PD Indian, South Carolina, and there we go. But it's just so crazy to me that she's still.
But it's in identity politics to the umpteenth degree, and as long as they can beat that drum with regard to, this being my identity, and I identify to some extent with a form of victimization, they'll beat that drum as often as they can, and it's a shame. Just speaking, let's say, from the female perspective, the identity politics with regard to the marginalization of women. And that's another thing where, as a woman, it bothers me to constantly hear that drum beat, especially by those who, attend the women's marches and things like that, when they marginalize conservative women all day long. If we're pro-life, then we don't deserve a voice. If we're a Nikki Haley, then we should be silenced, mocked, or lied about. It's just a shame, and I'm tired of it.
Right, and all the crud that surrounds the State of the Union address, it's all this divisive talk. It's all, it's going after the president for being divisive when the talk is divisive. It's a time for everyone to come together, and you have the State of the Union address. And I watched the response, the Democrat response, Joe Kennedy, and it was awful. It was just personally going after Trump and very thinly veiled comments about saying that to Trump's administration, your race matters, your income level matters, like whether you have dignity, who you marry, like what gender you marry matters, and all this. It's just these attacks on Trump and his administration that are unneeded. But the thing that really hit me about the Democrat response is they talk about how it's all these false decisions you have to make between the coastline or the heartland, the inner city or the rural areas, and all this, that, and the other, the single mom or the underprivileged other person. And he goes, well, we Democrats choose both. And I'm like, you're kidding. No, you don't. By choosing both and choosing to do everything, you're going to tax everyone to death, kill business, and do all these things that are very obviously going to happen from this. And then you won't be able to do both. You're going to drag everyone down in the name of leaving no one behind.
Well, it's fascinating. They in and of themselves have created a false dichotomy there, as if, well, they create this false dichotomy every time they're proposing policies, because they constantly do it by pitting two groups of people against one another. It's either, it's the bigoted, angry conservatives versus the poor, innocent dreamers. That's how they frame these things. It is women, or at least pro-choice women, against the patriarchy. And it's blacks against whites. And so I'll buy that one for a dollar, whatever Joe Kennedy said about, these false dilemmas. They've created those constantly. That's the platform they typically stand on, and it's a shame.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on the show. We got to wrap this segment up, unfortunately.
Thanks for letting me go on my diatribe.
All right. Have a good one. Well, thank you to Brooke for coming on the show and talking with us about CLC coming up and talking with us about the State of the Union address. And again, thank you to you, the listeners, for being here on the show with us, for coming back for another week. If you're listening terrestrially, if you're listening on the website, if you're already subscribed and listening to the podcast on your device, but thank you for listening however you are. If you want to follow along with us on social media and kind of hear from us outside of just the show, you can do that by going and searching What Matters NC on Facebook and Twitter. Again, that's What Matters NC on Facebook and Twitter, and we'll catch you next time.